Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, the question is, what is the worst political mistake the Bush administration ever made? You may say it was Iraq. You may have your own idea about it. I think it's probably the Medicare drug plan that Congress passed a couple of years ago, but is going into effect now, and people my age and older are beginning to wrestle and notice that they've got just a whole bunch of, I think, complicated choices in front of them. And so I've asked two people to come and visit with me, not that we're going to solve every problem or make every political judgment right, but Dr. Jim Bryan is our favorite counselor and physician in Chapel Hill about things that go beyond just the practice of medicine, but go into the real nitty-gritty of how federal medical policy affects patients and affects the doctors who are providing those services. And Jonathan Oberlander is an associate professor of social medicine at Carolina and is intimately involved with medical students, but also with Jonathan, you call yourself, you are a political scientist as well as someone who focuses on medicine, but you're known across the country as an expert on Medicare. We'll not be talking about all of the Medicare, but you know you've been forced to study the new drug program. Let me just say that I follow politics, and I've made a lot of mistakes in politics in my life. I don't know of another situation that I've seen that just so from the start was just so obviously a political mistake, in the sense that what it's done is set before a very group of senior citizens the requirement that they make a lot of complicated choices. Some of the people who are forced to make these choices are just not going to be able to do it and are going to miss out on whatever benefit there is in the Medicare drug program, and others are going to either make mistakes in making the choices and come out much worse than they would have had they made other choices, and others are going to make the right choices, but they're just not going to work out right. And so at the end, aren't there going to be a bunch of angry people? Jim Bryan, are you seeing anybody angry yet, or are they just puzzled right
just,
now?
Just puzzled, confused, and worried because they have to sign up by a certain time, and they have only 6 months, and there are so many different options. And I've looked forward to this because John is going to tell me which option for me to take. But everything I read in the papers is very complicated, in the sense you have 800 numbers to call, and then they give you a lot of figures about who will help cover if you don't have much. I'm thinking of my poorer patients who don't have computers, and some may not have phones, but going through those hoops is too much.
Poor patients maybe without the resources to pay any sort of premium.
That's correct. And there are real numbers out there that say that somebody else will pay the premiums or help you with it. But at the same time, every little incremental loss on what they get from Social Security is horribly meaningful for them. And their drug bills are escalating. Someone said that this plan is really supposed to help the drug companies, and that's a paranoid view. But I'd love to hear how John's going to guide us.
I want to come back, Jim, throughout the program and check back with you about what patients are asking and what as a physician what you're worried about and what your colleagues are worried about as primary care physicians and counseling their patients and just worried about what to do. But maybe, Jonathan, I've heard you do this before, and just you do a beautiful job of sort of explaining to those of us who have a tough time understanding how this thing happened politically. How in the world did we get here?
Well, remember that scene from the movie Exorcist where the girl's head's spinning round and around? That's how you feel when you sort of dive into this after a while. This was a bill that was born of political compromise and of fiscal constraint. And what happened was the Democrats had a vision of what they wanted as a drug bill, which was a comprehensive vision, a more expensive vision. The Republicans had a vision of the drug bill that was more limited, and they sort of compromised. And we probably got, in a sense, the worst of those two worlds put together in one bill.
Can you sort of explain in simple terms what the outline of the coverage that is provided by the bill is?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that it's universal, and this is important. Anybody who's eligible for Medicare can sign up for this regardless of their income.
So that's everybody.
Everybody can sign up.
Over 65.
Yes. It's voluntary, so you don't have to sign up. So it's universal and it's voluntary. The coverage itself is hard to explain for a number
of
reasons.
That's why I want you to do it.
Well, if we had a week instead of an hour, we might get there. But, you know, there's the standard benefit works as follows. You pay a premium of about $35 a month. Then there's a deductible of $250. The government then pays 75% of your costs up to $2,250. From there, we get the much talked about donut hole when your coverage stops. There's no federal coverage at all the way up to $5,100. Then the insurance coverage kicks back in and pays 95% of the costs. The reason I say this is hard to describe is that we have in North Carolina 38 different plans that you can choose
now,
from.
Now, why you described a fairly simple concept for a plan, which is that, I I'll give it back to you, not exactly the way you gave it, but in essence, I get, first of all, a plan with a modest premium, which gives me 75% coverage up to $2,000 and some, which sounds pretty good. And then, as you explained it, then I sort of have disaster coverage for everything over 5,000. If I'm really into it, then I get everything covered for disaster purposes. But essentially, all I get if I've got a reasonable cost is 75% coverage up to $2,000. That's kind of the way I understand it. But then you say there are, all right, so that's my plan. But then there are 30 some plans available. Where do we get from one sort of concept plan to a whole bunch of plans? And how does that work?
Well, they decided, you know, the way the rest of Medicare works is it's offered through the federal government. So you have Medicare Part A, which is for hospitals, Medicare Part B, which is for physicians, and you sign up through the federal government, and that's how you get your coverage. What the administration and the majority in Congress decided to do is make this explicitly not like the rest of Medicare, but instead offer it through private insurance. So you actually cannot get this coverage from the federal government. You must pick a private plan. And those 38 plans that are in North Carolina, they don't look like the standard plan. They range in premiums from $13 all the way up to $65, and their benefit structures all look different. So that's why I say there's no one standard plan.
Well, then how do, if the plan, sort of the outline of the plan was as you described it, how do the insurance companies give something that is outside of that sort of, outside of the outline that you gave us? How does that work?
There are a lot of surprises with this bill, and they just keep coming, you know. There is some fine print in the bill that said that plans could offer something that was different as long as it was actuarially equivalent. And they're giving a sort of liberal definition to actuarially equivalent.
So that some plans that might not be quite as good might be attractive because they have a lower premium. Jim, Brian, for instance, for some of the poor patients who really
would rather pay 13 than 39.
39, yeah. No matter what the consequences might be in the future. Is that sort of the reason you think that the insurance companies are coming up with those low?
Well, I think, you know, it's a segmented market, and there are a bunch of people are throwing darts at the board, and they're going to see what sticks. My guess is that 2 years from now, we won't be talking about 38 plans in North Carolina or elsewhere. There's going to be a shakeout. But right now, it's a sort of gold rush.
Mm-hmm. Jim, Brian, just on this particular point, if you're a physician, or let's just say I'm your patient, and I come in and you take a look at me and you come to a fairly quick conclusion about what medicines you would prescribe for me under this plan. And then if there were one plan, you'd kind of know whether or not the drug that you were going to prescribe was covered, but it might be under one of these 39 plans that might or might not be covered.
That's exactly right. And when you read the newspaper, they'll say that 75 to 95% of your drugs that you need may or may not be under your plan. And, John, what happens to the rows that aren't? If only three-quarters of your drugs aren't covered by the plan that you chose, or a quarter or not, how does that cut it? How do they deal with that?
The physician has a right to make an appeal on your behalf if you're taking a drug or if he or she prescribes a drug that's not covered. What we don't know yet, because we haven't tried this, is what's going to happen to those appeals and how often are the companies going to deny them versus accept them.
Well, you think the difference between $39 and $13 has to do with the company getting a break from the drug house itself around that particular brand? Is that the way it works,
I don't know. A large part of that cost difference has to do actually with how much deductible you have to pay and what your cost sharing is in generics versus brand name. Yeah. And, you know, one of the many crazy features of this plan is the drug company can actually drop a drug that it's covering with 2 months' notice. So you sign up for this thing, you could be on for a few months.
The insurance company could drop the drug that it's covering.
Under the rules, in the middle of the year, they can just drop it. This would
drive a practitioner crazy, because even though he chooses a drug with the best idea and hopefully with some knowledge of the cost of that drug for the problems involved in the patient, the idea of changing from one to another is daunting, because there are fine-tuned differences between the pharmacology of these various drugs.
I'm just worried as your patient, mm-hmm. Coming in, and you're instead of concentrating totally on my mm-hmm. problem and what the best medicine is, you feel also obligated to me to try to be sure that I can pay for the
That's
drug
correct.
That you prescribe. And you check my plan. You find out that my plan does not include coverage for the drug that you think would do the best job for me. So you go to the second best drug and then make a judgment about whether or not this will do the job.
Tell you that in the trenches in the clinic, you have a pattern of prescribing that has these sets of drugs, and then when you present your drugs to the plan, I will then perhaps get feedback from the plan that this drug is not acceptable to that plan, and you'll have to change to this the next one, and I'll make a judgment about whether I'm not going to be the primary looker at that drugs. At the particular formulary
you'll make the judgment on the
drug. What I want.
What you want. But Jim, what you will do is that you'll come to have experience with popular plans.
That's correct.
And say, I can't. I'm not going to go through
right.
the trouble of going
That's
for
exactly
an appeal.
Right.
But the other thing that worries me is that you're going to be spending a lot more time making these judgments and negotiating with the insurance companies than I would
This has happened to me in the last 10 years. This has already happened a lot, because there are formularies that are insured, covered by the insurance companies now, and I will have to clear the drug I want with the person at the central place. Sometimes this is Merck Medco and wherever it is. And, you know, I won't be surprised that I'll be talking to somebody in Calcutta before long. But this is the way that the houses, the insurance plans work out their bureaucracy is going to be interesting to watch. I cannot possibly hold what the formularies of all of these drug houses have in my mind. So I'll have to let you find out whether the drug I prescribe is, and then if you can't get it under that, I guess you'll either do it out of pocket or what, John? What happens?
You have to go through an appeal process.
So there'll be a lot, I mean, you're already into this, into the appeal. Understanding that it gets a lot more complex, and maybe the thing for us to do is to take a breath, catch our breath, and we'll come back and talk about some of the other features of the new Medicare drug plan, both positive and negative.
Okay.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. We're talking about the new Medicare drug plan, and we're talking with Dr. Jim Bryan, who's talking to us about the impact on his patients and on his colleagues as physicians who are practicing medicine for these patients, and John Oberlander, who is the expert, both these guys, professors at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. John, you're a political science, and you follow the politics of all of this, but you're sensitive to because you've maybe you understand this program even better than the physicians do at this point.
No doubt.
You know,
nobody understands this program.
But you've got some feelings about what this is going to do to medical practice as well. What are you worried about?
Well, I think in particular there's one problem that Jim can really speak to, which is back to this issue of the donut hole, where for a lot of people the coverage, and these are high spenders, federal coverage is going to stop in between $2,000 and $5,000. What's going to happen is come next September or October, Jim's going to see patients that he's been prescribing blood pressure medication, cholesterol medication for a lot of chronic conditions. They're going to come in, and all of a sudden, their Medicare drug coverage is going to stop. And he can talk about the medical consequences of pill splitting and stopping a medication you've been on for a while. And
there's not enough samples in his sample packet.
A lot of people are going to hit that donut hole next fall, and I think that's going to be a real problem.
And they'll get there faster, in particular, as the capacity to develop drugs that cost up to $10,000 a month develop. Some of these people are being treated for some of these inflammatory disorders, and they use biological drugs that are injected, and they cost $2,000 a shot.
Well, I'm panicked about this, but mm-hmm. let me ask this question, and you'll help. Maybe this is a help. The people that we're worried about hitting the donut hole in September mm-hmm. are people who this year, by and large, don't have a drug coverage. So they will, right now in September, they're paying something close to the full amount now. So it won't be something totally new to them and their physicians to deal with this.
That's correct.
Am I right about that, or is there... Yeah, does that make it a little bit less onerous?
Yeah, no reason. Don't jump off the studio. No reason to panic. Yeah, it depends what kind of coverage you have now, and there are different groups of Medicare beneficiaries. Some of them have pretty good coverage from their former employer, or say the state of North Carolina or the VA, and they don't have to move. They can just sit where they are.
They stay where they are. They don't have to sign up.
Some employers are going to drop coverage over time, and those folks are going to find themselves all of a sudden in this plan that doesn't have quite as good coverage as they're used to. And I would say, the great irony of this is a population, and in Medicare, we're talking about 42 million people, not just the elderly, but about 4 million Americans with disabilities. It's a population that uses a lot of prescription drugs, and yet we are giving them a policy of drug coverage that would never be acceptable to the employer age population. We were never, if they try to do this in the state health plan, and we may not be that far away, given where the state health plan is going, there would be hell to pay. But yet we're taking these vulnerable populations and we're giving them a very limited benefit.
Well, you guys, Jim, typically for a older patient over 65, where do they range between the two, that most of them get covered within the $2,000 limit?
I think by and large they do. The people that come to the clinic a lot, of course, are the folks who have chronic illnesses. And if you have a chronic heart disease and hypertension and diabetes and heart failure, your drug bill is going to approach $400 to $500 a month as just because of those conditions in terms of modern treatment and with just drugs and none of these expensive biologicals either. If you're healthy and you exercise and you maintain your mobility and you're not doing anything needing much, you can get by. I've had 100-year-old people who've never taken anything. And that's the ideal, of course, is to prevent having to take drugs at all.
In Medicare, DG, about 5% of patients account for 50% of program costs. About 10% account for 70% of costs. And the point is that's a small part of the population. But the point of insurance is to protect all of us because you don't know when you're going to fall into that 10%. So mm-hmm. it's not just that most of the people are going to make out okay and aren't going to hit the donut hole. The question is for those of us, and it's going to be a lot, who do over the years, what happens to them?
Well, John, we talked about the medical features of this, and we'll return to that because I think most of the folks who are listening with us are more interested in how it will impact them or their parents or their uncle and aunts or their favorite, the older people whom they have an interest in. But I'm interested in the politics of this. And I want to know, if as best you can, when the birds come home to roost?
Yeah.
When if you're just kind of looking at points in time when people become disenchanted with this, if they're going to become disenchanted, what is the sort of the timeline for this to happen, and what can you say might be the political impact, not just on President Bush and the Republican majority, but also on AARP, which supported this bill, the Democrats who were insistent on having some kind of drug program? Is anybody going to pay, and who will it be, and when will it be?
That's a good question. From the perspective of the Bush administration, You could say that they might not care that they've already won, in the sense that there are a lot of folks who said that if they didn't get this bill done, and remember, they barely got it done at the end of 2003, it was a very close vote, that maybe they would have lost that election.
That they got a drug bill and they could campaign that they got a drug bill before anybody started taking a hard look at it or anybody became disappointed.
The implementation was delayed, mm-hmm. so you didn't have to worry about the problems, and they don't have to mm-hmm. worry about 2008. So in the short term, they won, and they don't have to worry about the long-term consequences. You might see a pattern there. Mm-hmm. In terms of AARP, you know, there's been a lot of anger at AARP getting behind this bill when it did and the way it did. And I think, you know, the issue is there's not really an alternative to AARP out there for most folks. So
if I quit AARP, I got no other.
Not unless Jim starts one for you.
Radical,
you have nowhere to. You have nowhere to go.
Retirement. I mean, this is like the. I'll just get into this because it's a sideline that I'll be exploring later. But when the state employees got tired of having moderate representation, and so they got radical representation. There were pros and cons of that. And then the Citizens for Business and Industry, the State Chamber of Commerce, has gotten tired of moderate leadership. And so they're probably going to hire a radical. Well, I'm a senior citizen. I'm tired of this moderate representation. I want to have a radical one, but I can't hire radical leadership. It's not available, as you point out. We're stuck with AARP.
Right. There is one precedent, which is in 1988, Medicare passed the catastrophic health insurance bill. And this was a bill that was going to limit catastrophic expenses in Medicare. It also, by the way, had a prescription drug benefit. People got real upset at the financing.
Right.
It imposed a very high tax on seniors. And in fact, all the financing came from seniors, especially from high-income seniors. And there was a sort of rebellion against that bill. And 16 months later, that bill was gone. Now, I think this one, that's not nearly as likely to happen, but really we just don't know. We don't know how many people are going to sign up for this. We don't know what they're going to find it like when they actually experience the benefit. I think, there's a penalty that people are going to pay if they don't sign up on time. And I think that's one of the things that's likely to change, because they're going to hear when they go back to their districts from Washington that people are really unhappy about this. And the truth is, it's the crystal ball's cloudy. We just don't know.
Well, you know, all right, I'm going to push you, but you know better than anybody else. And so what are your hunches about it?
My hunch.
And we won't hold you to it because we don't know anything, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But we would just kind of, and you can hedge it as much as you want to. But just give us a scenario of what might, of something that might happen based on sort of what you see there. And we will not come back and play this recording a year from now.
I appreciate that. One of the good things about teaching is you can make all these predictions to your students, and they graduate. And 3 years later, when you're wrong, they're gone, so it doesn't matter. So I appreciate that. My best hunch in the short term is that this bill isn't going anywhere. There are too many people invested in this. And one of the arguments that
you need the bill to change it.
I mean, the bill itself is not going to be overturned. I don't think you're going to see a repeal you did in 1988.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, one of the arguments AARP made is that if they didn't love this bill, but if they didn't make that deal in 2003, they would have lost the money that was on the table. And if you look at the projections of the budget deficit
right now.
You can understand that thinking. I think you're going to see it really depends on how stable or unstable the market is and how many of those 38 companies drop out. You'll see some pressure, I think, to stabilize the market. You'll see some pressure maybe to liberalize the benefit, maybe to roll back a little bit. There's certainly, if the premium goes significantly up over time, you're going to see pressure to hold the premium down. But even though there's a lot of unrest in the short term, I'll be surprised if there are major changes in this bill.
Well, that's really interesting. What kind of advice do you give now on site when a senior comes up wide-eyed, or probably not a senior, but a child of a senior comes up and said, we're wrestling with mom and daddy's health benefits, and we can't understand it. We've gotten mail from 15 or 20 different insurance companies. We have not understood the first thing about it. Help me. I mean, what do you tell? What do you
and what does a deadline really mean, John? You would be penalized. What does that mean?
Well, what it means is you have until May 15th, if you're currently on Medicare, to sign up. And if you there's several groups of Medicare beneficiaries. Let me just go over them real quickly. One is the population that, again, already has good drug coverage through their former employer. And they can stay where they are, and they should have got a letter in the mail that said that their coverage is what the government calls creditable. they can stay now, and a couple years from now, if they want to switch, they can. There's no penalty. There's another group of benefits.
The penalty, just to be sure, because I didn't understand this, the penalty is that the premium is going to go up and up and up the longer you delay signing up for this program.
1% a month for the rest of your life. So you're going to have this for the rest of your life. So in other words, if you sign up a year late, you're going to pay a 12% higher premium as long as you're alive and on Medicare.
All right, I got a signal from our buddy Jeff Hamlin. We need to take a break, but we're not through with this. I'm talking to Jim Bryan and John Oberlander about the new Medicare drug plan. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm scared to death. These guys have scared me to death. And maybe you too. We're talking about the Medicare, new Medicare drug plan. There's some great features about it. There's some ones that we're focusing on that are a little bit scary. And before the break, John Oberlander, you were telling us the best advice that you can give. I mean, what is the best advice that you give to people who come pulling their hair out and saying, I don't know what to do for mom and daddy. We got to make a choice.
I say get used to it because you're going to be doing it year after year because there's going to be a lot of churning off these plans. You know, I think, again, you've got to get one-on-one counseling. That's really important. And we've got some good resources here in North Carolina that we can talk about now. Or
yeah, like tell us, who can I go talk to?
I think a place you really want to start with is an organization that's run out from the state, out of the Department of Insurance. It's called NCSHIP, the North Carolina Seniors Health Insurance Information Program. And they're putting out very good information and also offering one-on-one counseling. And they have a 1-800 number. It's 1-800-443-9354. That's 443-9354. Also in your county, you may want to check into your local senior center. They have a lot of information. There is also a national organization called the Medicare Rights Center. And their website is www.medicarerights.org. They're very good. And finally, there's the federal government site. And that's, I want to stress, that's a mixed blessing. There's a lot of good information on the government site, which is www.medicare.gov. If you don't have a computer, you can call 1-800-MEDICARE. However, there is a prescription drug calculator that they have on there that they're using to help people figure out what their costs are going to be, which plan to choose. And consumer advocates are really urging people to wait. You have till May to sign up. At the moment, that calculator is apparently giving out, in some cases, inaccurate information. So if you're using that, you want to take that with a little bit of a grain of salt.
So there's good advice to be given, but not all of it is good right now.
That's right. So, you know, the most important thing is not to panic. Don't rush. You've got some months to make your decision. So, I really wouldn't rush into this.
We're talking about the situation. And again, we're talking about people who have got the wits about them to be able to wrestle with these decisions as hard as they are. Earlier, we talked about the person who's in good health now, eligible for Medicare, but not taking a lot of drugs. I mean, he says, I'll never make the deductible.
That's right.
So why should I pay premiums? And there's a consequence to that you mentioned, and that is that if you don't sign up now, you might have to pay an outrageous premium later on. You've got some good advice for somebody like that, don't you?
Well, I think one thing you may want to consider if you don't have prescription drug coverage right now, but if you're healthy like DG and you don't have a lot of costs, is you may want to sign up for one of the cheaper plans this year, one of those plans that has a low premium, $13, $20, $25. Because if you sign up for that plan and you find out the following year something happened to your health, Carolina had a tough season, your blood pressure went way up, you can switch onto another Medicare plan with no penalty.
You could argue that it is good at that rate. It's good catastrophic drug coverage for a healthy person.
Yes, I think so. Good absolutely. Bargain. Especially if you don't have any coverage right now, it's a good way to go.
Well, Jim Bryan, I promised that we'd ask you to talk more, even more reflectively about the impact of this kind of program on medicine. Now, the good part of this is that the total drug expenses for the individual Medicare eligible people is going to go down, probably. They're not going to have to pay as much. So is this going to be a good thing?
This is going to be good, especially since we are moved into an era when people are seeking, and the science is telling us that when we do things to people's blood pressure and cholesterol and sugar and et cetera in a more proactive that way, that we can obviate some of the later complications that come along with those chronic diseases. Therefore, this is almost a secondary prevention kind of strategy with drugs that we enter into, and they cost money. And so I'm grateful that there's going to be these patients that are already sick and are taking these drugs can have some help with their drugs. Now, I'm a bit confused about how they can push a button and get that done. Now, I can think about calling in to Eckerd's or – and how does this work, John? I call into Sutton's or Eckerd's or whatever, and then they are responsible for saying, what drug plan do you have? Is that how that works? Or
I don't know how that's going to work, but it raises a good point, which is one of the things that folks need to be aware of when they're choosing a plan is there are going to be restrictions on what pharmacies go with what plans. So if you're in an area where you love your pharmacist or you love your pharmacy, you better check out that they're covered, because not every pharmacy is covered in every plan.
Well, I had a patient today who's actually went to her pharmacist and said, which one of these should I choose? And they said, well, we don't know yet which plans will be associated. And this thing kicks in next January 1.
January 1, yeah.
So it's now 1 month away, and these pharmacists, this was a chain pharmacist, did not know which drug plan well,
Let me interrupt you, Jim. I really apologize for this, but we've been talking about a May 15th deadline, so don't rush.
Yeah.
But you can sign up and become
eligible in Gen 1.
January 1, if you need to take the benefit.
That's
of
correct.
It. So there is an imperative, particularly for those people who have some
needs
drugs
right now,
to make those choices.
That's correct.
And the caution that both you and John have given us is that the choices are not mature yet, that they're
That's
not
correct.
Really ready to be made. How quickly can you switch if you make a choice? You make a choice for a year or for 2 years,
John?
Or forever?
Well, you're going to be able to switch once next year. After that, there's going to be an open enrollment period.
Now, speak English.
From November 15th to December 31st.
Every year?
Every year, you're going to be allowed to switch plans. But once you make that choice, you're going to stay in
that
plan for the rest of the year.
Well, that makes that, yeah, okay.
That makes it pretty,
I understand.
Okay.
So the person, Jim, the person that we'd be worried about who's talked to the drugstores, gone to the federal thing and maybe gotten bad advice but has to make a choice, can make that choice and has the right, according to John, to make one switch next year at any time to, or at some, maybe some time
restriction.
I think
it's restricted, yeah.
But at some point during the year to make a switch so that it wouldn't be a catastrophe if they made a little mistake.
In any case, you're going to be in this for a year before next year rolls around and have a chance to switch.
You know, ideally, DG, we treat our pharmacists.
Jim, Brian, Jeff Hammond's telling us we need to take a break. We'll come right back to your comment after this short break, talking to Jim Ryan and John Oberlander about the new Medicare drug plan. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about the Medicare drug plan, talking to two of my two wise people who are helping me understand what's going on, Dr. Jim Bryan and Dr. John Oberlander from the University of North Carolina. Jim, we interrupted you at the break, and you've got something that's worrying
well,
you.
Well, what was on my mind is that the idea of teaming with people like pharmacists and nurses in order to make sure that someone with a chronic need gets his or her medicines correctly and knows how to use them correctly is sort of confused at least by a second level of people dictating which drugs will be available and those kinds of things.
So if I sign up, if I follow the good advice that John gave me as a healthy person to get kind of catastrophic drug insurance by signing up for the lowest cost plan, I may find that one of the consequences of that plan is that when I take it to my favorite druggist, he or she is not covered by this. And it might be that my physician's favorite partner in providing medicine would not be eligible. So all that's gone up for you're worried about that.
I'm worried about that because we're trying to teach our residents that they can use folks like trained pharmacists to help them manage diabetes care. For instance, we're developing teams of around particular issues in the hospital, which are usually pretty tough issues, and they end up in a setting where the drug itself is not part of it. It's the use of the drug that's the important part, And so it's not like handing out a pill and say take it three times a day. It's how to monitor the things you're trying to do.
Those of us who are consumers of medicine and medical services don't always know how to do that by ourselves.
Yes.
We need some help. Let me get you all to focus on one thing that I feel bad about not taking up earlier, and that is that there is a feature of this plan that provides for some help with the premium pieces of this for people with limited incomes. And how does that work, and is it going to work?
I'm not sure it is, if it's going to work. It's actually, for low-income folks, this is a pretty good benefit. And if you're below about $14,000 as an individual and about $19,000 as a couple, and there are some, unfortunately, in my opinion, some asset tests as well, you are going to qualify for this extra help that, as you said, will pay your premiums, help you out with those deductibles and co-payments. And a lot of this is being administered through the Social Security Administration, actually. But you can go back again to that agency I described in North Carolina SHIP, and see if you qualify for that. The problem is this is so bewildering, and so many people don't understand this and are so frustrated that I'm worried that a lot of people that qualify and are eligible for this help aren't going to get it.
John, if in a word, again, we're not ready to give the final answers, but if you're a poor person or you think that you might be eligible in Chapel Hill or Carrboro, and you're just pulling your hair out and you know you can't afford a lawyer or a counselor or anything like that,
and you're not interested in having your Social Security check deducted every month,
where do you go? Where's the best place for somebody? And you don't have a computer, you know, where's the best place?
I would go to the, again, to the local senior center here in Chapel Hill. I would go to the Social Security office locally. And I would get in touch with the North Carolina SHIP program, because they will have folks in Orange County. And I believe it's actually in Orange County. The contact for that is at the UNC School of Pharmacy. And they can offer you a lot better advice than I can.
No, well, that's really great. I guess it's possible then that a poor person, if they're able to negotiate these hoops to sign up and to prove that they meet the eligibility status, can have a truly close to fully subsidized drug benefit.
Or at least mostly subsidized if they're still standing at the end of the process.
Well, Jim Bryan, you're trying to retire. Nobody will let you stop practicing medicine. But what would be what kind of difference would this make between the medicine that you've gotten used to practicing and that you're having to deal with counseling young medical students and other new physicians in training that you're training about how to deal with these
right.
new features of medicine? What do you tell
well,
them?
Well, you know, the question about how to learn medicine and learn it in the ethical and philosophical context of caring. And caring involves facing these real-world issues. And the real-world issues now in our culture are defined by money, and they're very complicated. And how much you invest of your own intellectual and time to learn this as opposed to leaning on other folks is hard to describe.
Well, John Oberlander and Jim Bryan, thanks for helping us begin to deal with this. And we'll get y'all back as we learn more to help. But you've been a big help to me. Hope all y'all learned as I did. And we'll be back same time tomorrow.